The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
For sure. But it's, and we were talking in that interview, and it's like, okay, many of the same systems that I'm using now with other entrepreneurs, they're sitting there teaching them at high school and early college kind of a stuff. And that's really kind of where, like I said, I started going down that path of, okay, I got to figure out how somebody else got to have a route. Started off with the whole, the e-myth idea that I was definitely late picking up that concept. But what I started looking at was that, okay, you go from e-myth. Well, okay, Gino Wickman's got EOS and traction. Well, Bernard Hirsch has got scaling up over here.
Yeah.
There's a great game of business. And then there's the, it's like all of a sudden there's 30 different ideas and 30 systems. So
it's a noisy room.
Being the system, being the process guy I am, I started plotting them against each other. Okay, where's the strengths and weaknesses of each one of these? And I've actually got a full chart looking at several of the big ones. It's like, which one of these do you pick? None of them are the perfect all-encompassing solution.
Now, they all bring something to the table, but they don't all bring everything to the table.
Exactly. It's like, this one's good in process. This one's good in people. This one's good in strategy. It's like, okay, but I need all that for my business.
Yeah, right.
Where do you start? So that was, I actually took it from my technology when I was doing the consulting. I never wanted to be the Microsoft rep or the Salesforce rep. It was always, okay, what's the right technology for what you need for your solution for this business? So I've taken that approach with the coaching side to say, hey, we're not necessarily going to teach you EOS or scaling up or whatever. Let's take all the tools from all of them and build your system. Let's build what you need.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hey, I'm Jeff Chastain here, business transformation coach with Edmentus, where honestly, I work with entrepreneurs that have taken that kind of jump into the entrepreneurial journey, got excited about it, and then realized there's a lot more to business than just being an expert in their field. So we work together really with a process to help them gain clarity into what's going on in the business, as well as building ultimately a plan to have a more profitable, more scalable, and more saleable business in the end.
All right. So I think we're not live, but we're recording now. Jeff, I appreciate it. I know I was talking to you about our kids before we got on the mic. I dropped my daughter at college yesterday. You got your oldest is 16. My youngest is 16. We're like right in the thick of things. So now you're doing the driving thing. Wait till you start looking into college. And it's just, it's crazy. The whole college system, we could do like a whole, I've had college people on the podcast, you know, it is such a business and so not an education.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, we could debate as to whether we educate our kids well through the public system, but we educate them And then they go to college and you spend your life savings sending them to college or go into debt, say, whatever it is. And, you know, and it's so they can have poke bowls and crepe bars. And, you know, it's not that with the exception of like the food plan and all, and the fitness centers and all the crazy stuff. We didn't have that when we were in college. It's ridiculous to spend $50,000 to $80,000 a year to educate your kid. It shouldn't cost. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm wrong. Shouldn't cost that much money.
Well, no, I'm right with you. I was reading an article the other day about how somebody had gone prestigious kind of law school, or I don't know if it was law school or something else, but same kind of thing. And they were coming out of that in debt of at least $250,000 and looking at, well, my first job out of here, I get $40K a year.
Right.
How the heck am I going to pay off $250,000 in debt at that point?
Right. Never.
And I don't know. I look at that and say, okay, one, you should have known better there. You should do your research. But to me, that's the same kind of thing with business too. It's like, okay, you go, and I did it early on in business. We were trying to do an IT firm and we went out and got all the SBA loans for it and didn't know exactly how to run business. But now we had all this sitting here debt. And of course they wanted us to pay it off, kind of a thing like that. It's just, you got to be smart with it. But yeah, I look at college and like you said, it's still a couple of years away, although we're already getting solicited for it, kind of a thing. And
so, yeah, well, you're going to have to start looking at schools by next year, right? She's a sophomore.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's I mean, most of them we look summer, at historically.
In between sophomore and junior year, we started going on summer trips and, you know, whatever to see the schools. Easier when you get through some kids. Now you've been to some schools and the kids, you're knocking them off your list. Scratch. But that, I got to say, Jeff, you are the segue master. So that was an excellent segue because that is the problem with business. Like with going to college, a lot of us, not everyone, but a lot of us just, you know, you grow up, your parents maybe went to college, maybe didn't. They're like, you're going to go to college and you get educated and that's what you do. And you don't even question whether it's a good thing, bad thing, good investment. When it comes to business, there are so many people that should not be entrepreneurs and in their own business. And I'll preface that by saying, if they took the time to learn and to educate themselves and to work with people like you, they probably could be entrepreneurs, but they don't. So we have this growing part of the population that's becoming entrepreneurs, some by accident, like my podcast, and some on purpose, and some intentionally, and some just, but there is no real plan. Nope, very few of them write a business plan. And like you say, that's what you know, you call your banker and say, hey, well, you know, we're thinking of renting this space and do it. Okay. And they send you an SBA application and you got this and you got, I mean, I think some of the SBA programs require business plans, things like that, but not very comprehensive.
No. And it's one of those, as long as you can go download a template off the web these days and then fill it out, you're pretty much there. And
exactly.
To me, that's the bigger challenge is that it's almost too easy to get into business these days. So you can go
much too easy.
Go down to the county office and fill out a quick form for a DBA or even still you can get your own corporation.
You can do it online here.
Do it
all online.
Overnight almost. So
yeah,
it's to me. And that's honestly, it's like you look at the statistics and everything. Yeah, you've got the ones that struggle to get out the gate. That's the typical entrepreneur. But then you see the second failure rate at 5 to 7 years when all of a sudden, it was like we were talking about your practice beforehand. Somebody jumps in, I've got expertise in law. I've got expertise in my case was IT at that point, accounting, finance, whatever. I'm going to go build my business. What you don't necessarily realize is there's a heck of a lot more to building a business than just being a good lawyer or just being a good IT technician.
Yeah.
So that 5 to 7 years is when you basically have created yourself a job. It's you're the boss, you're the employee, you're the janitor here.
Right. Well, if you're both, you're really just working for yourself. It's not, you're not an entrepreneur.
So you're working 60, 80 hours a week. By that point, you kind of hit that burnout stage to say, hey, this is not what I wanted. I wanted a nice company. I go sit on the beach, let everybody else do all the work kind of thing.
Right. That was the vision, right? You never followed through on it.
Yeah. So that's the second phase where we start seeing entrepreneurs bail out again to say, hey, I want to go back to the early startup days. Those were fun. I'm going to start something new. And you just end up in this cycle. And it's like, okay, you've invested so much into this to the end up where at that point, like we were talking college, you've invested 4, 5, 6 years into this, spent 50, 60K a year. And you get out and it's like, okay, now what? Without a
plan. Very little plan. Yeah, no plan. Yeah. I mean, you picked a major you're excited about, but you didn't realize you're only going to make $40,000 a year. You know,
exactly.
Working. Yeah. Never pay it off. I think your comment too in the opening that you did is really true. So there are some entrepreneurs that become successful in a business. Like they know that industry, they know whatever it is, but they don't spend the time to develop the skills that we're going to talk about. and they can't transition to another business. They sell the business, the industry changes, whatever, it runs out, or they sell it. Not always lucky to sell it, but things do, the wave breaks eventually, or the industry changes, and they don't have those basic skills that, you know, that that real entrepreneurs and founders and startups, the guys, you know, I mean, there's guys that you and I know that you, we could throw them into any company and they would be successful because they have the basic skills that they need to run a business. But a lot of people don't. They just figure out one kind of business.
Well, that's really the thing. It's like the ones you see that are really successful, a lot of times are not, their business is not even in their area of expertise. So
right.
They went and started a business, hired in the expertise to it. They're looking right. at the big picture. They're the visionary. They're yeah. the business, brought in the expertise.
Yeah, they're not working for themselves.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like in many ways, they're forced to say, hey, I've got to go hire in that expertise because I don't have it. It's almost more trouble when you've got the expertise at that point because you keep putting yourself
down. You think
down.
You can do everything yourself. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. In that operator seat, it's like nobody else can do this better than I can. It's like, well, reality is, yeah, they can. And if you'd hire them, then you could actually have that time on the beach that you were wanting here because you're operating a business, not being the operator in a business.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people miss when it comes to writing a business plan. They're like, what do I need a business plan for? Well, obviously, well, you and I both know they do. You got to work out the financials. You got to work out the operation of the business. But you also have to work out, like you said, where am I going? Where do I want to end up? Do I want to be the entrepreneur that's opening the shop at 4:30 in the morning and sweeping the floors and doing, or do I want to be the business owner, which is why we often go into business, to have freedom of choice and to have freedom of schedule and things like that. But you do need a plan to get there, right? I mean,
you definitely do. Yeah. And I don't want to dismiss or whatever the person that wants to be there in the shop. Honestly, yeah, when I left corporate America, I went into consulting. And it was still me. It was time and hours or time for dollars, but I controlled my destiny. I controlled my work hours. I controlled everything at that point. And for a lot of years, I was perfectly happy with it. So if yeah. that's what you knowingly want to get into, knock yourself out. No problem at all there. But the issue is when you end up in that seat, yet you really want the bigger picture vision. And that's kind of where I always refer to it as kind of bridging a chasm there. You're on one side, you know where you want to get to, and you got no clue how to get across that chasm there, how to go build that. And that to me is where I find, unfortunately, too many people struggling.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I know we jumped right into it, right in the thick of things, but maybe we go backwards a little bit and talk about your background. Cause I know you were telling me off the mic before we talked last time about, you know, all the things you've done in the industries you've been in, your experience and so forth. And then we can get into more. Okay, what do you do from here as an entrepreneur type of thing?
Sure. Yeah, no, I started out, I touched on it earlier. I started out in corporate America. So I went through the college, actually landed the job in my junior year. So I didn't even completely graduate. I went ahead and graduated, got the degree, but I was already employed by that point. So a little bit safer path at that point rather than getting out and surprise. Yeah. Now what are we going to do? But yeah. Spent 7-8 years in corporate America and just honestly got tired of it. I was riding a desk, moving between big corporate reshuffles and stuff like that, and said, okay, this is just not me. This is, I want to actually know what I'm working on today matters in some bigger picture.
What were you doing then? Like finance or operations or marketing?
No, it was, I've been IT. I've been software IT, since day okay. one. I actually grew up coding software back
in the bad industry to be in.
Green screen, cursors, flashing cursors kind of thing. So back in the dark ages here.
Yeah, I know. I grew up in my dad's insurance company and that's what it was. You turn on the computer and there's a blinking green little dot.
Exactly.
They're like, what do you do from here? Well, it doesn't do anything. And then the world changed with Microsoft.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But we were still in the early age Apple. Of that. But so no, I was always IT and always software, which again, big process nature, big systems. I saw the value obviously with software right off the bat with that.
Right.
But so got tired of corporate America, like I said earlier, went and said, hey, we're going to go be a consultant. So I kind of look at that as kind of halfway out the door, because on one hand, yes, it was my own business. It was my own corporation, but I was still working for other companies there. So I'd largely made the shift into small to mid-sized businesses at that point, doing what today would be called a fractional CTO. So still technology advisory,
sure.
Long before the term fractional ever became cool, kind of a thing.
Right, exactly.
And honestly, I had a blast with it for quite a few years, but 7-8 years into it, probably a little bit longer than that, got tired of the pure dollars for time.
Right.
Said, hey, we got technical expertise, partnered with a business partner at that point to go start an IT services, a managed services firm, providing outsourced or outsourced IT work. And
yeah,
again, kind of what we touched on earlier, I was the expert down the technology lane. Unfortunately, my business partner was also the expert down the technology lane. So we jumped into this and said, sure, we can build this. Picked up a good client base right off the bat. But we were still struggling to say, okay, how do we turn this beyond just the two of us? How do we get this? How do we grow this into a real company?
The two of you is still a consultancy, basically, right?
Effectively so, yeah.
But that's a big problem in professional services, because people want you as their lawyer, as their accountant. And if, like I told you, I have that problem right now. I went back out solo. It's just me. I, to be honest with you, Jeff, I couldn't tell you what my plan is. It hasn't materialized yet to figure out how do I get from having to do all the work and being available on vacation to, you know, having someone, you know, I have support, but I still have to do the legal work. You can't just delegate. Yeah. You got to delegate to lawyers. So it's difficult.
It's interesting because on one hand, a lot of the coaching professions look at the legal field and say, yeah, that's just don't even bother there. You can't get lawyers to come around to running it like a business. But at the same time, I've got two or three lawyer clients that are very similar kind of thing, that they're small, trying to branch it out, trying to build out to a firm just because, like you said, they don't want to work 68 hours a week kind
of
thing.
Well, I think lawyers, the problem with lawyers, and I can say this because I'm a lawyer, the problem with lawyers is that we have no business skills. We're not taught business in law school. We're taught to be a professional and all this kind of stuff. And I don't think it's that people, that they don't want to. I think they don't know how. They don't even have a vision that it could be something like that. The legal profession is ripe for, like, you know, teaching business skills. It's really...
It's weird that so many people will say that, yet it's almost impossible to get into that industry. And I think a lot of it, it's definitely what you said. You don't have the business skills, but then you look at the established models, you look at the big firm models, and it's all designed, at least from my outside perspective, and you can probably fill it in better, it's all designed in silos, that you've got the partner that, okay, he's got his paralegals or his people underneath him with their assistants.
Correct.
Right next to another partner with their paralegals, their assistants. It's like these silos sitting right next to each other. It's a marriage of convenience for most aspects.
And you know what? One of those silos breaks down, the whole system falls apart. The attorney dies. There's no transfer of trust or anything like that. The clients then scatter. There's really no, in law, there's no non-competes. You can't force you to work with a new attorney. That's not possible. So yeah. And that happens a lot. So the older guys are waiting for the young guys to take over. The younger guys aren't being groomed to do that. The younger guys get older and say, well, we don't need these guys. What are we going to do? And they branch, go out on their own to do the same thing that these guys just tried to do. And it perpetuates itself.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not saying I have an answer for you yet. You got to build a model, but it's hard with professional services because you need the professional to do the work. It seems to work better in medical. Maybe because of insurance, you have them. I don't know.
No, actually, medical is the other one. I see a lot of times struggling just trying to get out of the mold. Usually, it's medical and legal both.
Right.
But yeah, it's professional services. You get there, but the issue, and granted, I'm not an expert in law. Is like even the IT side? Yeah, you've got the senior IT guys, but hopefully, you're training up the people, technicians, et cetera, up underneath you to start promoting that, and bringing it in. But I always joke with business leaders, like, don't fire me right off the bat, but I can and really should be able to describe your business in about 15 seconds, that there is a marketing function that you're going out bringing in new leads. There's a sales function to convert those leads into customers. You got an operations function to deliver service or product, either one. And you got a finance function, hopefully, that's collecting money on the back end. And regardless of your industry, whether it's law or whether it's not, if that foundation, if those four components there are not working together, if you don't have a customer journey, a path flowing through those, if you don't have a system for moving that person all the way through there, you're going to struggle with it. So again, on the lawyer side, you've got the operations, the system right there of this is how we deliver the legal services. What about the marketing side? Are you spending a whole bunch of time out doing networking and all that kind of stuff?
Right.
What about the sales side?
Yep. There's no question about it. Lacking or it's very haphazard. They think they're going to networking events or attending bar events. They're talking to people. They're posting or sharing, liking. I don't know, whatever. They're probably very few of them are doing that. But yeah, and they just, and the business just kind of comes in. It's like just ad hoc. I call it like ad hoc legal services. They just kind of wing it all the time.
Oh, yeah.
You're always looking for business. Then you get busy and you stop marketing and you're doing your work. And then your work goes down and you start marketing again. It's a yo-yo. It's a roller coaster.
Yeah,
it's law. I agree with you.
Oh, no, it's anything and everything. But it's for whatever reason, like I said, I'm not trying to hit on lawyers, but it's that industry just seems to have a hard time realizing that, okay, you got to run it still like a business. It's not any different than,
well, you know, accountants have a regular recurring business, right? So if you have a book of business, those people need accounting and legal service and tax services every year. Medical professionals have a book, have clientele. Those people need health issues every year. You don't always need legal help. Maybe you should, seek legal
you
help.
You probably need it a whole lot more than you should know.
Right, but you don't think you need it. So it's not a recurring revenue stream. It's a difficult model. It's a difficult recurring revenue stream to build.
Yeah, I can see that. But to me, and again,
I'm not saying you can't do it. Yeah, it's definitely a nut that can be cracked. There's no question about it. So, all right. So you and your partner in IT, and where'd you go from there? So now you're in this consultancy thinking, what do I do next?
Well, we took it, what I describe as kind of the throwing darts approach, throwing darts phase. Hey, we're in IT. We know we need to do some marketing. We know we need to do some sales. So let's go try this marketing company. Let's go try this marketing strategy. Let's go do an outsourced sales company. Maybe they'll work. Oh, that didn't work. Let's go try to hire in a sales guy that says he knows all about the IT stuff, even though we don't know about IT. So, hey, you go build the sales plan. You go figure this out. Just bring us the leads, kind of a thing. Right. And all that results in is a lot of spinning the tires in the sand, throwing a lot of time, a lot of money at all these things you're trying because you don't really commit to them. You spend 30 days or 60 days with that marketing strategy. It didn't generate us a bucket load of leads. So we're done with that. Let's move on to the next thing kind of thing here. And that's where you end up when, honestly, you don't have expertise in any of those areas. We're just trying and grasping at things. And we made it just shy of 4 years and burned through, like I said, burned through the SBA loan, burned through all of our extra revenue. Even though we had clients on, we were spending more in all this other stuff than we were bringing in at that point, and literally ran it into the ground at that point, just trying to figure out, okay, how do we scale this thing? How do we grow this thing?
And it just didn't work.
Yeah, it just didn't work at that point.
You know, it's like cash flow hides a lot of things, but eventually, if the cash flow is less coming in than it's going out, gravy train runs out.
At some point, it's going to catch up with you for sure. And the SBA doesn't just keep extending more extensions and more extensions.
They don't do that. You don't just call them up and say, listen, we're running negative, so we just won't pay you for 4 years. No problem. Don't worry about that, Mr. Chastain. We have a whole program for that.
Well, I haven't found that rep. If you know that rep, then let me know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. That's when they used to have debtor's prison, and we don't have
that. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So no, we ended up shutting down that practice, like I said, almost 4 years in. And really, that kind of spurred the transformation really with me to say, okay, didn't like the time for hours kind of a thing in consulting. Obviously, something didn't work here with the IT services firm, even though I can see other IT services firms that this is working. Got to be a better way to this. And before I go start something new, I don't want to rinse and repeat. I don't want to do the same thing. So it's like, there's got to be a better approach to building a business when I don't have a business degree. I didn't learn all this stuff in school, even though now that I'm into this, I'm not sure that helps. Value of those too.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It might help if you're on the MBA track, but I'm not sure if it helps in the small.
I actually went back to go get my MBA at one point, made it a year into it. It's like, no, this is not going to benefit me at all. This is too theoretical. It's like, okay, where's the real?
Yeah, you want to go work for McKinsey or something? It's perfect.
Oh yeah, yeah. But running your own from an entrepreneurial standpoint, no.
They don't do that. I know some of the colleges, I don't know if it's in the MBA programs, but now the schools are having entrepreneurship, you know, majors and departments and things like that. That's nice to see. I have never seen anybody's curriculum though. I have no idea what they're teaching, if I would agree with it, if I think they're helping these kids. I don't know.
Yeah, I actually had somebody on my podcast, and I'm trying to remember what it, I remember her name, but I can't remember her program. I'll have to look it up, but it was a summer program that they were doing for kids at that point. And it was a business incubator. They were starting companies and launching companies out of this entrepreneurial kind of program at this point.
Was it called the Young Entrepreneurs Academy?
No.
There's a group out of Rochester. We ran a program for them for about 5 years. They have, I don't know, 100 chapters. And that's exactly what they do. They take middle school, high school kids. They develop a business idea, write a business plan. It's like a 30-week program. And at the end, they have like a shark tank. And they get money and they launch these businesses. So that I'm not surprised that there's other programs around.
Yeah. Now this one's called Launch X. It's Lori Stash program, but Launch X, but it's the same type of
concept. Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's great. I mean, you imagine if we went through that when we were in middle school.
Oh, I would love to have been part of that. Yeah.
We'd be in a different place now.
For sure. But it's, and we were talking in that interview and it's like, okay, many of the same systems that I'm using now with other entrepreneurs, they're sitting there teaching them at high school and early college kind of a stuff. And that's really kind of where, like I said, I started going down that path. Okay, I got to figure it out. Somebody else got to have a route. Started off with the whole the e-myth idea that I was definitely late picking up that concept. But what I started looking at was that, okay, you go from e-myth. Well, okay, Gino Wickman's got EOS and traction. Well, yeah, Bernard Hirsch has got scaling up over here.
Yeah.
There's a great game of business. And then there's the, it's like all of a sudden there's 30 different ideas and 30 systems. So
right, it's a noisy being the, room.
Being the system, being the process guy I am, I started plotting them against each other. Okay, where's the strengths and weaknesses of each one of these? And I've actually got a full chart looking at several of the big ones. It's like, which one of these do you pick? None of them are the perfect all-encompassing solution.
They all bring something to the table, but they don't all bring everything to the table.
Exactly. It's like, this one's good in process. This one's good in people. This one's good in strategy. It's like, okay, but I need all that for my business.
Yeah, right.
Where do you start? So that was, I actually took it from my technology when I was doing the consulting. I never wanted to be the Microsoft rep or the Salesforce rep. It was always, okay, what's the right technology for what you need for your solution for this business? So I've taken that approach with the coaching side to say, hey, we're not necessarily going to teach you EOS or scaling up or whatever. Let's take all the tools from all of them and build your system. Let's build what you need. But it still goes back to that fundamental idea. It's like, okay, how do we put the systems in place to where you can have the right people sitting in the right seats at the right time? You've got a purpose, a strategy that they all buy into, because honestly, in a startup, you can't afford top talent.
No.
But hey, maybe they'll work for less if they've got something that they can buy into, something they're really excited about, that, hey, this is our mission, what we're doing.
Yeah, mission and vision is very important. And some of these people just take a job and then they're in the wrong position. They don't even know what to do to support the business because they don't know the vision.
Yeah.
Very common.
So if you can do that, build up a playbook to where, again, I always coach it towards treat your business like a franchise. Even if you're not planning to franchise it, the idea or the reason why McDonald's took off so quickly was because it had a repeatable system. You can go to McDonald's University, they'll hand you a book, say, okay, this is the way you follow this plan A to B. You got a successful business. And I know they didn't have it in the IT world, probably not in the legal world. You didn't jump out and say, I'm going to be a new law firm. Here's the plan from A to Z, how to do this.
Right. And there's no book.
Yeah. And that's what McDonald's was able to give their franchisees and why it's so successful. As I always say, it's like you could put your Kraft custom burger house on one corner of an intersection, put a McDonald's on the other corner, which if anybody's been to McDonald's, you know, it's not high end dining or anything,
but
the McDonald's will be the one that's still standing in the end.
Comfortable. Yeah. If anybody's listening, they should watch the movie, The Founder, with Michael Keaton. He plays Ray Kroc, and the whole story about the McDonald's brothers. And they, what he saw in them was, wow, these guys had this down to a science.
Mm-hmm.
And the McDonald, the one brother, was just very good at systems. He didn't care about making a burger. I mean, he did. He cared what went on the burger, but he had a whole system of how to get the burgers. 30 seconds, you could have a burger, a drink and fries in a bag. And Kroc was like, holy, they revolutionized the food. Of course, you probably die eating it if you eat it too much. But that wasn't like that then. It was all beef hamburgers. It wasn't healthy food, but it was a lot healthier than it is now. But yeah, you can, if you can systematize your business like that. And so, look, some businesses are harder to do that with than others. But if you can turn it into a science where instead you're like not a burger chef, but instead you're a guy who runs a business that has a system that provides a burger or whatever it is to a customer. Yeah, I mean, you're winning 90% of the battle.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Well, it's that, and it's you're gaining that repeat and that referral business, which is key, because I can go back to that McDonald's the second or third time and get exactly the same thing.
Consistency,
even if it's a different location or it's a different chef that day or whatever. That's where we, for the ones of us that like trying all the new restaurants that pop up, it's like you go in the first time and the atmosphere is great. Everybody's excited. You get great service. You come back the second time and the service is dropped off.
Yeah. You want the experience to be the same. That's what you're expecting. You know, it's interesting. So in the movie, and if you read the book or whatever, the brothers had, they had tried to franchise the business. They had five or six locations and they weren't able to run it like a business to control quality. And these other places were doing things and selling chicken. I don't know what they were doing. But when Kroc took it over, he was the one who changed the whole system and said, hey, listen, we're going to do consistency. And he started selling all these franchises and built something that they had tried to do and weren't able to do. So it's not just because you're a system, you know, it does, like you said, there are four pillars and you got to have all the skills, but you don't have to have them yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's really the key is it's, again, it goes back to being that expert. You gotta be a bigger picture right there if you truly want to be an owner. And that's where it's making that transition from early days, starting out on your own, of being the operator, being the one that has to do it, making that mindset shift over into owner is really, it's a challenge for sure for a lot of people, but it's, if you want to grow the business, it's what you've got to do at that point. But I want to go back for a second. You were talking about processes and systems are easier in some businesses than others.
Yeah.
I actually hear that quite a bit, and especially from like creative firms, design firms and stuff like that. It's like, everything's different. The reality is—
That doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. I'm not suggesting that.
But there's aspects to it. I was just, like I said, I've got another lawyer client, was just talking to him the other day. He's like, yeah, all these different agreements kind of a thing there. It's like, okay, yes, but if you're going to go form a new LLC for a client right here.
Right.
It's a standard set.
It's a process, the same process every time.
Every time. So we can write a system around that because, and it may even be a fairly simple system, fairly simple checklist. Okay, we've got to do these 10 things. But what that does for you is it takes the mental energy out for you. You're no longer having to think, okay, it's been a week since I did this. Did I really get all the boxes checked? Did I get them in the wrong order?
It also becomes transferable to someone else much easier.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So that's what we're working with. We're working with him on saying, okay, you need to bring in a paralegal, bring in an assistant, somebody that can help you with that. You hand off the pieces that the research, you hand off the pieces that go fill out these forms, bring them back to me. I'll do a quick review, sign it off and send it out. That's where he's looking at scaling because all of a sudden he's not having to spend 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever it is on it. He's spending 30 minutes and doing somebody else that's half quarter of the rate to cover some of the work. So yes, there's pieces of it that, you're still going to have to do if you're in that type of business. Or like I said, when the creative agencies kind of a thing there, hey, everything's still creative. We got to design a unique product for our customer, but there's still pieces of the business. Your administrative of onboarding a client, your
a lot of things
process,
that get repeated.
Your invoicing process.
Sure. Well, there's a lot to be said for building an operations manual. A lot of companies are like, well, we don't have that. Well, but that's how you make it to the next level. You, in order to get your people on board and to say, you know, look, someone dies. So when they move away, they're like, listen, I can't work here anymore for whatever reason. Now you bring in the next person, you got to teach them everything again. But if you have an operations manual and you've put it all down, it becomes much easier. I'm not suggesting that. I just saying in some businesses, it's harder and you have to spend more time, like you said, pinpointing what those things are. But I agree with you. Just because it's a creative process, just because I have to, you know, write a different contract for the people, depending on what their criteria, there are always 5, 10, 15, 20 steps that are the same every single time.
That I would venture a guess to say you're never probably starting from absolute zero with a contract.
Never. Yeah.
You're taking pieces. You're taking a boilerplate and filling in the blanks for all practical
purposes. I have stuff I've created over the years. I don't start. Yeah. I pull out a contract. Oh, yeah, I worked on this contract. Now, sometimes that's hard to systematize. But if you create a library, let's say as a lawyer, right, you create a library and this contract was for this company, you could say to somebody, hey, pull the contract from that company and use that as a template. And let me take a look at it afterward. That's, you know, a way to get around some of that stuff.
Yeah.
But you do have to build the system. You have to build the products because some of it is creative. Some of it is, you know, intellectual property that you have to create. But I have created. I've been doing it for 30 years. I have a
and I would venture to say most companies, all companies, honestly, should have that layer of IP on top of it, because you want to be able to differentiate from your competitors at that point.
Yeah, but good point.
The underlying aspects, like I said early on, that marketing, that sales, that operations, that finance, that's standard across any and every business. The more you can systematize that so that you can spend your time on that custom IP right there, that what makes you different.
Right.
And yet I can replace, like you said, it sounds bad from a people person or people perspective, but the reality is, on one hand, you need to be able to replace somebody. They leave, whatever. You got to be able to have somebody else step in without the company shutting down. The other side of it, honestly, I talked to people and said, hey, do you ever want to get promoted out of your job? Because if all the knowledge is in your head for this role, I can't ever promote you out of that role because I got nobody else to replace you with. That everything's right there in your head. So it's almost a self-limiting thing for your employees anyways, because you can't bring them up. You can't.
Right. You're not helping them. And they're not, I think a really good exercise, if you have an employee who started with you and then the business is very dependent on that person, they're doing all kinds of stuff, send them on a vacation for 2 weeks. Give them a month to prepare everybody and say, listen, she is out of the box. You cannot talk to her. It's as if she doesn't exist, and let the little hens, little chickens fly a little bit and see what happens. And then when the person comes back, they're not going to lose their job. They're going to become the president or the office manager or whatever, because now they can supervise people who understand what's going on. It's kind of because business has become too dependent on, one or two key employees. It's a dangerous way to live.
Which, granted, again, early stages, you almost have to. You can't afford to hire 10 people.
Right,
of
course.
The faster you can do that, and to me, that's one of the great benefits today of the whole fractional model, the outsourcing model, et cetera, is I can bring in a fractional CFO here.
Right. I don't need a payroll, put them on 5 hours staff, give them benefits. Yeah, right.
Kind of thing like that. I don't have to pay the top dollar for a full CFO. I can bring them in for 5 days a month, kind of a thing.
Right.
Get the small amount of work I need done, get that expertise done.
And probably get better expertise, right? Because
definitely get better than what you
hire them full time. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So I think there's a lot more options to that these days from what I've worked with others.
Sure. CFOs, there are fractional COOs. There's
fractional
CMOs. Yeah. They're all out there doing consultancies, because I think they recognize too, that they couldn't get a job making enough money for what they think they bring value to the business, and they can help a lot of people. So the people that are comfortable with that model, they go out, they'd rather work with small business owners who couldn't afford you full time and help them build the business. But the funny thing is, it's going to be a long time before everyone's doing that. So there's no shortage of people that need fractional services.
Oh yeah.
I kind of hold myself out that way as a general counsel for businesses. It's a fractional model. I'm not going to work for one company unless they're paying me a crap load of money, but it doesn't make any financial sense to them to work for them full time. It just, and I don't want to work for a large corporation. I don't want to do that. I want to be an entrepreneur. So I work for family owned businesses with partners, startups, founders, entrepreneurs, all that type of stuff, where they can pay me on a monthly basis or whatever regular basis, a fraction of all the other people paying me a fraction. Then I'm making money and they're getting, 30 years of expertise. It's a good model.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, it's to me, that's the model you can actually build a company on, because you don't necessarily have to go out and hire. You want some expertise in house, but still you don't have to. You can leverage that to get up to that next level right now for low money right there, that you can get, like you said, true expertise there, that I'm not having to hire the junior legal kind of a guy there. Like you said, I can hire somebody that's 30 years expertise, that knows this stuff, has seen things from other companies here for the amount of money I need. But it's really, and I look at that to say that, okay, how do you start as that entrepreneur figuring out, okay, where do I start branching off? And to me, that's one of the biggest struggles I always hear. Anytime we've been bringing guests on our podcast as well, talking about it, that's the hardest thing for them to say, okay, start delegating, start handing things off and knowing which one. And I've had people ask before, it's like, okay, where do I start? Do I always start with the finance side or always start with a salesperson? It's like, it really depends on you at that point. There's no right answer. I always look at it, anybody in that case, and say, okay, make a list over a week, 2 weeks time of what you're actually spending your time on, and then kind of go through and rank that and figure out, okay, what's at the bottom of the list? What do you honestly not like doing and you're not good at anyways? And those are the things we need to start getting off. So maybe you are the people person that likes going out and networking and doing that kind of stuff. Great. We'll keep that for right now. The fact that you're not keeping your books up to date and not doing collections, That's a problem. We're going to need to find somebody that can do that side for you, because I know you hate doing that. Let's go find somebody there, versus it may be the exact opposite. Maybe you like there, you're the introvert. You want to be handling the numbers, making sure you keep control over that. Great. Let's go get a marketing person. Let's go get somebody that can do the social media, that can do the outreach, whatever, and help you. So it's not ever a cut and dried formula, but to me, it's always starts with looking at, okay, where are you spending your time? And because you got the expertise, we got to make sure your time is spent in the most valuable areas, and updating the website, updating the books, doing whatever else kind of stuff that you spend your time doing when you're a lawyer, when you're an accountant, or whatever else, probably not the best use of your time right there.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that was one of the problems with when I partners, is that I found myself doing things that I didn't feel I should be the one, you know, to do. I want to go out there and develop business and do the work, and I didn't want to be doing the books and the this and that. We had a COO, he's a friend of mine, but you know, still, it's the kind of thing you want to decide what you want to get away from. And I understand that what you're saying is that the formula is the same. It's just a question of where you start. And, you know, some areas are weaker than others. That's always the, right, the secret, figuring out where's the weak link in the business model. I was asked, this business template, like for a business plan, for example, some of these templates are 8, 10, 12 sections, something, and they have subsections, this and that. I always look at it as, like, one day I was like, well, how can you boil it down to like 4 basic areas? So at least they get started with something and it can grow from there, right? So I always felt there was the, you know, the product or service and what it was and what it did and where it was going. And are you developing it? Is it going to be one product, multiple things, whatever? There was definitely the operational side. Do you have the people you need? Who are the right people? What should and shouldn't you be doing yourself or don't want to do, right? There's definitely the marketing side of it and sales and the marketplace and what exists in that place and who's the competition. And then there's the financial side and the books and, you know, are we profitable? Just because we sell it for a dollar, do we make any money and all that type of stuff? If people can concentrate on those 4 areas, which kind of lines up with what you're saying, and maybe those even develop into an employee handbook and an operations guide, a financial, you know, book, a marketing and sales guide or whatever over time, you know, they have a track to run on. And I think that's what they get from you is a, you know, like you said, you boiled it down to a kind of a directional program where it says, okay, we don't want to overwhelm you. Let's just start with the basics, the 4 major areas.
Yeah.
It always seems to end up with 4.
I will never say that it's something that you can go take to a bank or to an investor or something with, but I always work with entrepreneurs. And mine's literally 2 pages, front and back kind of thing. This is your overall strategic plan, starting with, like you said, core values, your vision. What are we going to be as a company? You don't want to just be another IT services firm. What's going to differentiate us? And we get down into specifics of, okay, what are the 3 specific differentiators that your entire team knows these 3 things? They're using that in their conversations, et cetera. So marketing stuff like that to really be able to brand yourself, differentiate yourself. And then we start getting into some of those things like you were talking about of saying, okay, our bigger picture. So we start out with a 10 to 15 year goal. That long-term pinnacle is what I refer to it, but I always go back to, we were talking computers and IT earlier. It's the Microsoft goal that they were saying, hey, late 80s, early 90s, whatever, we're going to go put a desktop or a computer on every desk and every home in America.
Right.
That point made no sense. And of course, today we're sitting here looking at 2 and 3 on our desk, but that to me, that's that big goal that you get people excited about. So what's our long-term? We're not even sure if we can get here. This is a nice idea, goal. But then you start bringing that back from the strategy standpoint to say, okay, now what do we set a milestone at 3 to 5 years to say, okay, if we can hit this milestone, we'll be well on our way to getting there. Then back it back again and say, okay, more concrete now. What's our yearly goals, yearly objectives to be able to reach that? And even bring it down to quarterly to say, okay, exactly what projects are we working on to make that? Because you want to get back to the point of saying, okay, John Doe sitting over here in manufacturing, whatever, he knows exactly this project I'm working on today fits into our quarterly plan or fits into our yearly plan. I know what I'm doing matters. I'm contributing to that big vision. So they're all bought into it there. So it's just getting that clear. But yeah, it's exactly. I break it down, like I said, literally 2 pages there of who you are, where are you going, how are you going to get there, and have that whole strategy plan there. And then I would also, the other side to it is I'll sit there and say, okay, on a quarterly basis, usually down here at the lower levels of it, this needs to get shared with the entire company. This is part of, it's completely transparent to them. So they know where we're going, how we're going to get there. And I'll even take it into the hiring process to say, hey, if you're hiring somebody new, pull out this strategic plan, walk them through this, because again, you want them to know what they're really getting into, that
right.
from everything of this is our core values, this is what we're expecting you to live up to here's our strategy, here's our long-term plan, here's how this role that we're hiring for is going to fit into all this. You want them to be really bought into and excited, not just here for a paycheck.
Yeah, no question. Employee buy-in is very big. And I think people overlook it. They just think that, oh, no, they understand what we're doing, and they don't. They got their own lives to deal with, and it's a job for them. And they, you know, and if they saw a vision, and maybe it's not for them, you know, maybe it is just a job for them, but you want to know that because, you know, like you said, once you've gone 15, 20 years from now, it's too late. Time is gone. It's over. So you got to do it right from the beginning. Can you share some industries that you've worked in? You know, you don't have to share specific clients, of course, but give us some examples of some industries you worked in where you found that, you know, certain areas are lacking more than others.
It's an interesting one, and I'm not trying to dodge the question really, but
I didn't give it to you ahead of time either.
Well, no, but it's still, it is. I've worked with marketing firms. Like I said, I'm working with a lawyer right now. I've worked with IT services firms. Most of it's been service industry. I've done a few kind of product-based things, but it really boils down to what kind of where we started of saying business is business underneath the covers. It really doesn't matter. Yeah. And what I find, it almost varies more on the size of the company.
Okay.
You got the smaller 5-10 kind of person company, the early stage company where maybe you've only got the owner, the CEO at that point that's still trying to ride herd on all the cats.
Right.
It's typically more of a delegation issue at that point of saying, okay, how do I get things off of my plate? How do I empower my team and get them to step up, start running some of this to where honestly I can take a vacation? So that's typically, we're typically looking at more of the playbook, more of the performance kind of ideas there. A lot of times those people look at me and say, I don't need a strategy right now. It's like, you really do, but I'll kind of tease that into you and we'll figure out that you really do. But then you go more to the bigger ones. So if you're doing a 15, 20 person company, you've actually got more of a leadership team. You got two or three people that are senior leaders, however they call that. At that point, they really are looking a lot more at the strategy side, at the people side to say, okay, how do we make sure we're really hiring the right people instead of, it still gets me. You go out to the job boards or whatever, and job listings are just this laundry list of, can you program this dozen languages? Like, honestly, I don't care if you can program the language. I want to know if you've got the critical thinking to break down a product or a problem from a programming standpoint, figure out how to put together that. And then I can teach you whatever language. If you know C, I can teach you Visual Basic or whatever kind of a thing. That's just a skill that hopefully they're teachable at that point. But I want to know the bigger picture thing of, can you break down the bigger problem? And more importantly, that, can you fit into our culture? Can you fit into the way we work as a team? We're a remote team now because of all this stuff. Can you handle actually being accountable and being part of a remote team working from home? Or are you going to get distracted with your wife being home or 10 other things or the kids or
the
whatever
dogs,
else? Kind of
right,
thing.
Exactly.
It's a personality thing. Can you really fit into our culture? So once you get into the larger companies at that point, they're a lot more dealing with issues around the people side, around the culture side, around the strategy side, making sure that we've got, again, everybody bought in, everybody working. I always kind of ask them, it's like, if you were to go walk around your office today, assuming you were still in person here with everybody, would you really find everybody in the office doing exactly what you expected, working on the most critical project or critical priority? And the reality is no, most of the time. They don't necessarily understand, hey, I've got five projects in front of me. I don't necessarily know where they fit into things. I'm going to take the one I like. And it's like, well, no, the one over here is probably the one that we need for this quarter's roadmap. But because you don't understand the roadmap,
right,
you're not working on the right thing at that point.
Yeah, so that's definitely.
They tend to be a lot more people and strategy, people and purpose kind of focused, whereas the small ones, they need it as much as the big ones, but they tend to be more focused on the playbook saying, okay, how do I offload some of this? How do I delegate some of this stuff? And the performance side to say, okay, once I delegate it, how do I know it's actually getting done and I'm not having to go back in and micromanage?
Right. Well, I guess the makeup of your clientele kind of begs the question of that service companies are, you know, people that provide services, can run themselves like a business. They can have
employees. Oh, absolutely.
And be systematized and so forth. I think that's a real problem. Well, I appreciate you spending some time with me and talking about it. I think that and maybe we can circle back again and compare notes in a year or so. I think we're at a unique time, right, in business with what's happened in the last, you know, year and a half with the pandemic. people that have gone into business because they had no choice or because they were like, I'm not going back to the city where I got to go to a job every day. And they are more in need of, you know, good coaching, good direction, good systems, good processes. So, you know, it can be digestible and understandable. I think that's one of the problems is that some of these books you read, some of the stuff you check out. Yeah. I mean, they all have good aspects to it, but you know, it never applies to you completely. And, you know, you're like, you know, and then they do part of it and it doesn't work because the person had designed it this way and, you know, becomes very frustrating. But I think that that's part of the journey, right? The business owner has to seek out the person that works for them, the system that works for them. Not everybody works with you and not everybody do you want to work with, you know, neither do I. I mean, there's people I just can't help. So you do the best with what you got. But I think that's a part of the journey is figuring out, okay, where do I find the right people to work with that, you know, fit that I feel good about and I feel they have my best intentions at heart and, you know, start there. And it may not be the last person you work with, but I find that, you know, the coaches tend to work with other coaches. It's funny how, you know,
there's definitely that. Yeah, no, I've got for sure my own network, but yeah, to your point, it's the ones that I enjoy working with are the ones that have that vision, have that excitement that, yes, I know I want to get there, but also have that realization to say that I don't necessarily have all the answers and I'm willing to listen at that point. Because if there's no point in having a coach, if you're not going to listen to them, if you're going to go do right. your own thing, it's like, well, I'm, and that's, to me, that's the difference on coaching and consulting and why I enjoy coaching so much more is I'm on the sideline of the game here. You're the one going in, it's still your company. You're going in to go play the game. I'm helping you with it. But at the same time, if you're not going to listen to me, if you're going to go in the right. game and play it your own way, then
you're not going to do the work.
It's not worth wasting your money or my time at that point.
Exactly. All right. So, Jeff, how can people interact with you? You have a podcast, right?
Yeah, we've got Building to Scale. We're just simply, like I said, strategies, tips, tactics. How do you scale that business? How do you scale that smaller business? It's typically aimed a little bit more towards the smaller business, but it's buildingtoscale.com. And then either through that or through the website, Edmentus is the company name right there. Always just happen to have a conversation. So that's more than anything. I try not to make it. It's not sales by any means. I'm not trying to push it. Like I said, it's got to be the right fit for everybody. But if you got a question about business, struggle with business or whatever, always just happen to have a conversation right there. Again, point you in a direction of a resource, point you in direction of a book, something like that, if you're still at that stage. But sure. Always happy to talk to people.
All right. Well, Jeff, I thank you for coming on. We'll put in the show notes links to your social media, your website, the podcast, all that kind of stuff so people can interact with you. And I thank you for, you know, giving me an hour of your time and sharing with all of our listeners.
Thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.